Dernière accélération, la dernière remontée, elle va être historique cette voiture, elle va être historique cette victoire, et il va être historique ce pilote, l'ultime accélération, elle est là, la victoire d'Esteban Ocon aujourd'hui, et oui, victoire d'un Français en Hongrie, il l'a fait, lui aussi il l'a fait, il rejoint la liste des Français, victorieux d'un Grand Prix de Formule 1, Ocon, vainqueur, oui, vainqueur au volant d'Alpine. Mais oui, mon garçon, mais oui, elle est pour toi, celle-là. Elle est pour Alpine. Elle est pour Jean-Pierre Jossot aussi.
There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula 1. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, Stephen, and there you have it. There you go.
Hello, this is Desiree for F1Weekly.com. I'm your in-depth correspondent.
Let's go with the qualifying, Steve.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Nasser Hamid, my co-host. This is podcast number 898, August 9th, 2021. Nasser.
Thank you, sir. I say Nando is very high on Nielsen rating. Everybody's talking about him, but top team owners don't hear a word they're saying. He is the midday, if not the midnight cowboy. Back to you, Chief.
Thank you, Nasser. On today's program, Aston Martin loses appeal. Fernando praised by everyone. Bottas preparing for life after Merck. And this week we have Gary Sloan with his monthly commentary from inthepitlane.com. And just a reminder, we need your contributions to keep this program on the servers. Just click on the Support F1 Weekly tab. We know you want to. Nas, welcome to the studio. How are you?
I am doing very good, sir. Past weekend and the past couple of weeks, I have been on my motorsports journey, and it has taken me from Marlboro, Maryland to Nashville, Tennessee. But before we talk about my escapades, what's happening on the left coast, sir?
We are preparing for the historical races at Laguna Seca. We have Pebble Beach. We have Gooding & Company. We have Mecum Auctions. Too many things to do. We have cars on the avenues tomorrow in Carmel, and I will be there representing the F1 Weekly familia.
Great, great. Send us a report and some pictures. Do we have a featured mark as they normally do?
I think it's Henry Ford.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and IMSA maybe, and stock car racing, and NASCAR, and we're in America this week.
Well, that's good. Well, I hope you get to see number 43, King Richard Petty's car, you know. And the beautiful blue car and the STP sponsorship, an all-time classic.
I'll see car 43, and I'll be looking for car 44, where are you?
Yes. And how is Mr. Rogers doing otherwise?
Otherwise, I'm doing okay. Everybody's happy, you know. We're suffering through a very severe drought, but we continue to bathe, so we're okay.
Okay, so you're not one of those unwashed masses, even in these tough times.
Correct.
That's good, Mr. Rogers. We are proud of you. So, sir, we have to, either we start or we end, but we have to talk about Fernando and the drums everyone is playing about his driving against his ex-teammate in Hungary, the same place he played his Congo Bongo countdown in 2007. The Battle of Budapest was absolutely the very best race fans can wish for from the best of the best. Definitely brought back memories of Imola 2005 and Indianapolis 2007. The San Marino success was incredible, as Nando back then was a whippersnapper, and it was achieved against the might of the moment, which was Michael Schumacher and Scuderia Ferrari on full song. The battle at the Brickyard between Nando and Hamilton, then teammates at McLaren, was intense, but clean. Nando signaling his anger or frustration to the team by driving to the McLaren pit wall during the race. Some of us remember that, Mr. Rogers. And now we have the Magyar moment from 2021 to remember till the end of time. One website called it a lesson for young drivers. And this is what Mika said on the Machismo, Mika being Mika Hakkinen, not Mika Salo. And I quote him, "I really believe Lewis would have won the race had Fernando Alonso not managed to keep him behind. That was a really fascinating duel to watch. In one race, Fernando has repaid Alpine for the faith they have shown in him." Unquote. End of quote. High praise from a two-time world champion. Would you like to add something to what Mika said? And I'm sure you feel the same way.
Absolutely. I mean, Mika summed it up so quickly as a world champion. Let's face it, that was machismo. And it was laughs as well, because Fernando feels like he hasn't been given a chance. You know, he could have been a contender. But no, everybody was grumpy. That's the biggest worry.
Yeah, and you know, to do this again and again against, you know, man of the moment, Sir Hamilton, in a car that was definitely not as quick as the Merc, that really, really speaks well of this guy, you know, how good he is. It's just sad for the race fans like us that Christian Horner or Toto Wolff would not open the door for him. But, you know, there's a whole story behind that. Yes, sir, you mentioned Aston Martin lost their case. Who would have thought that James Bond would lose a case? Are you surprised?
No, because these kinds of rules are pretty much straightforward. There's really no... If they didn't get the fuel, you're guilty. It's done. You know, they don't really care about all the scenarios added up to that particular case, and they were blaming a fuel leak or something. But the FIA doesn't care about crying and kerchiefs. They didn't get their leader. You are penalized. And pretty much they say, shut the effing up.
And, you know, this was not the first time a penalty like this was dished out. It has happened a few times. And, they have to enforce these penalties, whether we like them or not. I heard somebody, I think Gary Anderson, the ex-designer at Jordan, said that maybe what they should do is they do this sampling to make sure you're not using, you haven't gotten some rocket fuel from Michael Waltrip. You remember that case?
That's quality stuff.
Yeah. So he has suggested that maybe they can take a sample before the start of the race. But these things have happened. I remember there was some fuel irregularity where James Hunt was disqualified as far back as 1976 in that deeply contentious season with Niki Lauda and Ferrari. So, yeah, I was very surprised. And, you know, this crying in the chapel that Christian Horner did about taking their case to the Supreme Court. This was equivalent to Bobby Unser, who was rescued in the Colorado Rockies in dead winter when he had gone with his buddy to a totally restricted area. The Rangers saved his life there, and when they gave him a $75 ticket for going in a no-go zone, he takes his case to the all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court, which is ridiculous, you know. And I think that was also not very good from Red Bull to do that, because, you know, these motorsports is all about hustle and push and shove, and, you know, to a certain extent, of course. But I don't like these people crying and going to the, oh, I should have won, you know, oh, penalize him so I get 3 more points. I don't like that kind of stuff. And next, sir, gone. I was wondering if you bought this. For only $6.6 million, Lewis Hamilton's car that won the 2010 Turkish Grand Prix, McLaren MP4-25A, for those who are into these things, it was sold at a Sotheby's auction. The sale took place at Silverstone during the British Grand Prix weekend. And I was very surprised. This was the first time one of Sir Hamilton's car was ever sold at a public auction. I'm sure some have been sold through very lucrative private deals. And I wonder, you know, like Michael Schumacher had every car he drove that was in his contract. Apparently, Alonso has the same deal. I wonder if Lewis Hamilton has a deal like this, because, you know, by the time he retires with 130 poles and 122 Grand Prix wins and probably 9 championships, if your predictions come true, I think he can have a very impressive museum just of his car. But he has to get at least his teammate's car from one of the seasons. Which one would you recommend that he should get, 2007 or 2016?
Well, Nasser, I think you're forgetting the Lewis Hamilton of today. He's very green. He eats at nothing but greens. He's very earth-loving. And a car museum would definitely not be his style.
What else would you like to talk about, Mr. Rogers? We have a few more weeks to go before Formula One. What are you going to do?
I'm suffering already. I'm watching IndyCar. I watched, and that was great because the Olympics were over. We had Sunday with NASCAR. Then it went over to IndyCar in downtown Nashville. And then it went over to IMSA at Road America.
And NASCAR was at Watkins Glen, right?
Exactly. It was exciting and fun to watch them. Of course, your favorite, Kyle Larson, number 5, was the winner.
Well, he's from Northern California, Sacto, so good to see a Cali kid do well, as always.
Exactly. So that's what I was doing. Of course, he was fired.
Yes. Now we can say more than once. Okay, this is, we have a segment here called the Self-Destruction of Dan Ticktum. Now, let me just tell you how talented this kid is. In 2014, when Lando Norris raced in British MSA, or Formula MSA, which is now British Formula 4, he won the championship, but at one time, he was behind Dan Ticktum in the championship. Okay? And let me just tell you what the latest on this guy is. Remember, this guy is a 2-time winner of the Macau Grand Prix back-to-back, which very few drivers have achieved. But recently, during a video game, Dan Ticktum tried to be Sinatra of speed by singing, "Doobie doobie doo, Latifi is a poo." And of course, he's referring to Nicholas Latifi. He has been released by Williams from their driver development program, but Dan is claiming he departed from the team before doing his audition for Decca Records. This from a driver who was released from Red Bull program for inappropriate behavior while racing in Japanese Super Formula, which was only a few years ago. Back in 2015, I think it was the 2015 season when he raced in MSA with Lando Norris, he was suspended from all motorsports activities for a year. Actually, it was 2 years, but one was like deferred after crashing into Ricky Collard while the race was under yellow flag. And they had collided earlier. Both were able to continue. Dan was in the back of the bus operation. So when the yellow came out, he crossed like 10, 11 cars and crashed purposely very hard into Ricky Collard. So he's very hard under the collar, but he needs to be careful. Then, Mr. Ticktum was on his way to winning European F3 Championship before a late surge by Mick Schumacher stole his thunder. Dan wasted no time in making smarty pen comments about Mick's Prema team, prompting Christian Horner to say, "Dan engages his mouth before he engages his brain." I guess the term live and learn has not entered Dan's vocabulary or brain cells. And here is a little sampling of his behavior on the track.
Faster than them, mate. It's ridiculous. Like, why did I get a penalty for that? I didn't cause it.
Yeah, I will never give up, mate, but I'm just starting to get bored of the level of bad luck I've had. I'm really, really epic bored of it.
I don't know what I am doing in my life to deserve this. I really don't.
I was listening to his interview, and according to his own words, his dad's bank account does not have as many zeros as Nicholas Latifi's dad or Lance Stroll's dad. And I don't know why he's behaving like this. It's very hard to get into these driver development program. So if you're in Red Bull program, they kick you out. Then you go into Williams and they kick you out. I mean, who's going to pick you up? So your thoughts on this kid behaving like this?
It's terrible, but, you know, I put it all, a lot of it up to upbringing, the society you brought up in, and your surroundings. I mean, there's a lot of things that affect a young man's behavior, but it's sad because he was talented. But sometimes the brain, you know, is not so good. Yeah, when I saw that today, I was going, wow, that's over.
Yeah, maybe he can come here and take part in figure eight racing or something like that might work out for him. But, sir, we have to move on. And, you know, Mr. Rogers, in the last 3 years, you know, racing fans like myself and yourself, we're always happy when we see a new winner. And in the last 12 months, we have seen three new winners, which has been very good. Ocon follows Sergio Perez and Pierre Gasly in taking his maiden victory during this time. Now, interestingly, Ocon is the 111th driver to win a race counting towards the World Championship. And this is interesting factoid. He's the 14th French driver to win a race. And of those 14 drivers, five, which I think is a very high number, are one-time or one-hit wonders. Gasly, Jean Alesi, Olivier Panis, Jean-Pierre Beltoise, and François Sivert. So, sir, my question to you is this. We still have, like, how many races we have left now? Still about 11 or 12 races remaining. Will we see another first-time winner?
No, but we might see another champion win.
You mean a first-time world champion?
No, maybe.
Oh, a blue car winning with a different driver.
Totally, you know. El Machismo, mile 7 stickers down at the bottom so nobody sees him. Well, right now he's in a good mood. I mean, let me put it this way. His girlfriend's pretty happy too right now. So Fernando is on top of his game.
Yeah, but you know, there is a possibility we can have a new winner because the way Lando Norris is going, if there will be another argy-bargy between Lewis and Max, regardless of what anybody says. So that could bring out a new winner.
I could see that. That would make Zach Brown pretty giggly deep down in his gut and definitely ruin Daniel Ricciardo's career.
Well, talking of Zach Brown, you know, the news came a few days ago. They have bought a major controlling stake in what is called the Arrows Schmidt Peterson racing team, headed by ex-Indy racer, IRL racer Sam Schmidt. So they are getting very serious about racing on both sides of the pond, which used to be the case back in the 70s and 80s also. So we'll see how that thing works out. Do you think Ferrari will win a race this year?
It's possible. Leclerc has some really interesting luck. You know, he's got the kind of luck that you can't put your hands around like Lewis Hamilton does. Leclerc's got some weird luck. But yeah, we've seen everything. I think if he's going to win, it's going to be this year. It'll redeem Ferrari for the Canada turmoil.
And you know, another possibility of a new winner first time is Carlos Sainz Jr. You see any hope of him winning a race this year?
I do, but he makes mistakes. I like him. I agree with Ferrari. They might have the best driver team up, but I think it's still Alpine that has that. So, what'd you think I'd say?
And you know, there is also news circulating around Mick Schumacher. His uncle, Ralph, and his team boss, Mr. Gunther Steiner, are now in a war of words on a regular basis. Do you think Mick Schumacher will stay at Haas or they will move him across to Sauber, both Ferrari power teams?
It's possible. He's pretty thick-skinned, though, both Gunther and Mick Schumacher. So this could be nothing at all. But it is weird, the crooked C, Haas being pathetic. I mean, they've really lost all momentum. And I know they knew they would because of the 2022 regulations. But, I mean, for God's sakes, it was sad that we had so much hope for the Americano. But now, we got nothing.
Yeah. And, sir, while we are still talking Formula One, which we normally do before Motorsports Mondial, what do you think about Gran Premio in Cancun? Well, will that get your attention?
I can't see Formula One, Cancun, and COVID all together. That's nothing but a recipe for what do they call those? Super spreader.
Well, you know, hopefully in the year 2025, we won't have COVID, and maybe then we can have a Grand Prix in Cancun. But the reason I bring this up, Papito of Sergio Perez and his posses were in Hungary for a meeting with F1 decision makers. They would like to hold a second Gran Premio in Mexico. So that will be very interesting. On the streets of Cancun, of course, Chase Carey's dream come true, a destination city. And that will be great. You know, I'll take five F1 races between US, Canada, and south of the border down Mexico way. And with my retirement not too far, I can basically drive to five Formula One races in a season. Wouldn't that be lovely, Mr. Rogers? And at least when I'm passing through Laredo, Texas, you can hop on a Southwest nonstop from San Jose to Texas, and I can pick you up, and we can go there as dos amigos.
Well, that's true, but just think of the quality level on Mexico's airlines of the in-flight burrito.
Oh, I mean, they're going to be serving with avocados, jalapenos. They will do the best.
El pico de gallo, hombre. El la salsa picante, muy caliente. Yep.
So then we will start talking about muy macho, delicado burrito de Mexico or something like that.
Sí, cabrón.
There you go. But you know, Mr. Rogers, next year we have a Grand Prix in Miami also. So please come to Boca Raton, if not Boston, and we will take a ride to Hard Rock Cafe and have some cappuccino there with cheeseburgers and French fries and Formula One baby. And I'm sure Michael Andretti will be there so we can have some stories of wildcat days in Formula One. What say you?
I think you're right, and you're beginning to get the whole studio hot and bothered because I see Michael Andretti's wife in her fur coat boarding the Concorde, and it's making me very, very hot. So why don't we take a quick break, and we'll be back after these brief messages.
I am Carlos Reutemann. Please listen F1 Weekly.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial and the king, the guru himself, Nasser Hamid.
Well, my plane has been hijacked to Glasgow, so we'll have to start with Gary Sloan.
Hello, listeners. My name is Gary Sloan, and this is this month's edition of In the Pit Lane. So as the global pandemic continues to create havoc with the 2021 race calendar, Liberty Media continues to look forward. The company has an ambition to ultimately hold 25 races a season, and to facilitate this, the introduction of more double and triple headers will be necessary, regardless of the human cost to the teams. The company aims for a third of the races to be held in Europe, with the remainder spread throughout the world, including a wishless race in the continent of Africa. As part of the strategy, Liberty has examined the prospect of alternating races, with some circuits hosting every 2 or maybe 3 years. This has happened before, with, for example, the German Grand Prix, which was split between Hockenheim and the Nürburgring. Liberty will endeavour to protect the heritage races such as Monaco, Silverstone, Spa and Monza, but the rest will be decided on who has the deepest pockets. Currently, there are 33 FIA Grade 1 approved circuits, with more in the pipeline. So supply exceeds demand, hence a bidding war is created. Pre the pandemic, Liberty had plans to increase hosting fees, which in 2019 generated an income of just over $600 million, making it F1's second largest source of revenue. Individual deals are not disclosed, but an average of $28.7 million does not give a fair representation of the gap that exists between the European circuits and, for example, the circuits based in the Middle East. Liberty does consider the teams and sponsors' commercial interests in a country, as well as the TV audiences. But in the final analysis, cash is king. The argument for not racing in countries with poor human rights records, which may have changed post-Eccleston but didn't, is now finally redundant with the upcoming race in Saudi Arabia. Instead, Formula One is now positioning itself as a force for change, with Stefano Domenico declaring, "Formula One has zero embarrassment at competing in Saudi Arabia. Formula One has a role to play in advancing our values in different places in the world. Sport can progress this in a faster way by shining a spotlight. We can be an enabler and are discussing these kind of things with the Saudis." Well, debate closed. But what about the FIA? Well, the calendar falls within Liberty's remit, courtesy of the 113-year-old deal struck between Bernie Ecclestone and the late Max Mosley back in the day. As long as the circuit's administrative and safety standards are met, then the FIA has no say in where Formula One races. So no, it comes as no surprise Russian President Vladimir Putin is getting the checkbook out with the construction of the new Agora Drive venue in St. Petersburg, which will replace Sochi in 2023. It's believed the switch is due to Putin wanting to showcase and promote the region, and no doubt the Haas team's controversial Russian-themed livery helps, especially as the doping ban on flags for the nation's drivers begins. In other developments, Domenicali continues to court the American market, telling the Business Breakdown podcast, "The United States of America represents one big challenge for us that we need to make sure we take in a good way." Well, enter one Roger Penske, who confirmed at the Goodwood Festival he would love to welcome Formula One back to the Brickyard. The only problem is, he wants to pay $20 million, and Liberty is looking for $30 million. So I think it will be a case of who blinks first. Domenicali has been a busy man of late, meeting with Sergio Perez's father Antonio at the Hungarian Grand Prix. According to Reforma, a Mexican newspaper, Antonio was heading up a consortium of Mexican business people to discuss the possibility of a second Grand Prix in Mexico, most likely in Cancun. Qatar, who has long held ambitions to host a race, may also be exercising its influence behind the scenes. Liberty is in talks with the Volkswagen Group, aiming to get the company back into Formula One, either as an engine supplier or team owner. Well, as a sweetener, Liberty may agree to race in Qatar to satisfy Volkswagen's second largest shareholder, QIA, the sovereign wealth fund of Qatar. Liberty's made a lot of noise about the advantages of some of the new circuits, with Ross Brawn commenting on the Saudi circuit. "We no longer want Mickey Mouse circuits. We don't want those old classic street circuits with 90 degree turns. We want fast sweeping circuits, circuits which are going to challenge the drivers, and they're going to love this one. We want circuits where we can have wheel-to-wheel racing." What about the most important but all too overlooked stakeholder, the fans? Well, in a survey carried out in 2020 on Formula One's Fan Voice website, only 10% agreed with the notion that there should be more races. Of those surveyed, 51% think the current number of races is about right, while 39% feel there should be fewer races in the season. Interestingly, the five events the fans are most looking forward to in 2021 are the Netherlands, Britain, Italy and Monaco. So time will tell where Formula One ends up racing, but it may not be in the countries or at circuits that have the fans' blessings. That's it for another month. More details at GarySloan.com. Until next time, stay safe, stay well.
Gary, keep up the good work. Another outstanding job from InThePitLane.com. Mass, how's MM doing?
MM is doing all right, sir, and we shall talk about, where do we start here? Well, let's start with MotoGP, okay, from Red Bull Ring. This you will like, Mr. Rogers. Spanish 1-2 in the race and French 1-2 in the championship. Maiden win for Jorge Martin on a Ducati, and I think this is a private Ducati, not even a factory Ducati, right? Second was Johan Mir. And your compadre, Monsieur Fabio Quartararo, leads the championship over fellow Français Johan Zarco. So that's very interesting. And I know there have been some big name French riders in the past, but I do not recall French riders leading the championship 1-2 in MotoGP in quite a while. Okay, sir, while we are on MotoGP, we have, sadly, arrivederci from Rossi. The doctor announced retirement from his highly successful practice in Austria at the end of the season. And Valentino, as we all know, has been a shining star in MotoGP since his debut. And he made the announcement in Austria. I don't know if this was the reason, but his first podium in MotoGP came at that track. Rossi is regarded as one of the best ever racers, with the Italian having won 7 Premier Class titles, so he's like the Michael Schumacher of motorbikes, and 9 overall across the whole motorcycle. You know, they also have 250cc and 125cc championships. Now, this is very impressive. He has won a record 115 115 Grand Prix motor races, motorcycle races, I should say. 89 of them in the MotoGP category, and his 235 podium appearances. That's numero uno in MotoGP. So very, very impressive. You know what I will remember him among many other performances? Once upon a time, I think it was a MotoGP race at Donington in the rain, and he was not leading when I was watching, and he came through the field and took the lead and then won the race. And then on the cool down lap, he gets up on his bike and he's like motioning like he's playing the violin. So that was very, very cute. Now, he has not been on a podium in more than a year, and last time he won a race was 2017. But you know, you just can't keep on going. Father Time will catch up sooner or later. Just ask Graham Hill and Michael Schumacher. Okay, this is what he said, and I quote, "It's a sad and difficult moment for me to say that next year I won't race with a bike. I have done this for nearly 30 years, and next year my life will change from a certain point of view. But it was great and I had so much fun. We still have half a season. I think it will be more difficult when we get to the last race." End of quote. And apparently he's going to do some sports car races. And now that he's no longer in MotoGP, because once I went to a MotoGP race at Laguna Seca, and I spoke to these, you know, three major teams, Honda, Yamaha, and Ducati, their PR people, and I realized getting to a MotoGP rider for an interview, believe it or not, is even more difficult than getting to Lewis Hamilton. But that's the way it is. Now, some of Rossi's battles with Yamaha teammate Jorge Lorenzo were absolutely amazing. I am thinking the final lap in Barcelona 2009. I mean, what a classic it was. And the epic battle he had with Casey Stoner at Laguna Seca some years ago. And Mr. Rogers, I was at that race running up and down the front straight. And that's the day I really got the feeling of what it was like for race fans being at Dijon-Prenois in 1979. Any thoughts on Rossi, sir?
Well, I'm not a big motorcycle guy or two wheels to say. Know that he was the greatest. He was the greatest of them all. He's the serious goat in MotoGP.
Yeah, but it was like, you know, like Michael Jordan or Michael Schumacher or Wayne Gretzky. People who are not following his sport also knew him. I mean, the guy just really was very big news. But anyway, that's the way it goes. Now we come to IndyCar and their inaugural Tennessee Waltz. Oh boy, what a thing this was. Marcus Ericsson was the winner despite taking a flight after running into Bourdais, who later called him not a Swedish meatball, but le douchebag. Local American talent Colton Herta was star of qualifying and race till he pasteurized the wall late in the race while chasing Marcus for the win. You know, Mr. Rogers, unfortunately, I have not been to a Formula One race since the 2019 season finale, so I am hungry like Walter Wolf for motorsports. I took a flight to Nashville on Saturday, returning Sunday night, hoping to go with my buddy to the race, only to find out late Saturday afternoon, race will not start till around 5 p.m. local time, which was very, very surprising. So my friend and I watched the crash fest in living color from my friend's palatial casa in Franklin, Tennessee. Now, this is where it gets interesting. And there I enjoyed my brush with NASCAR greatness as we did a drive-by at Darrell Walter's palatial property. He lives in that town, by the way. I was hoping to get a look at his beautiful Mountain Dew Billy Bob Newey design NASCAR Chevy or whatever that car was, but I guess it is not out for public viewing. But sir, there are two things for you in Nashville, okay? One is the Lane Museum, where they have cars. Have you heard of this museum, Lane Museum, in Nashville, Tennessee?
Now, sir, I own a Traction Avant Citroën. I used to drive a Renault Caravelle. I know the Lane Museum like I know the palm of my hand.
Well, you are machismo, and I'm not surprised that you tell. So that's very good. And but you know, as you know, they have a selection of cars that you normally don't see on Highway 101 or I-95. And selection includes brands like Alpine. I was thinking about you, Mr. Rogers. They have cars from Alpine, Citroën, Ligier, Matra, and Tatra from Czech Republic, including a Prague ambulance. And Tatra, by the way, is a company, I think it's even older than Ford and GM and Mercedes-Benz, or at least as a manufacturing company. There are some old scooters, plus an old British Army APC, Armored Personal Carrier, which is on sale. This is an interesting place, and if any of our listeners happen to be in Nashville, I will, and I think Mr. Rogers will also recommend a trip there. And the other thing of interest for you, for the French and you, Mr. Rogers, because I am told by my friend this is a new thing, that Nashville is now the bachelorette party capital of America. And party was in full swing on the streets by the racetrack with some mighty fine samples. So when was the last time you were at the Lynn Museum, sir?
Oh, many, 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 many moons ago. But he's very well known, especially in the oddball cars, like BMW's Isettas, BMW 700s, Messerschmitts, all the freakish Vespa cars and the Fiat Multiplaces. The Lane has it, you know, your odd du chevaux, ami six, ami quatre, allez hop, on y va, he's going to have bar. It's a great museum.
Yeah, and they had that BMW Isetta, or whatever it is called, and that French name that starts with P, which you can pronounce, I cannot. And so it was very interesting. I really enjoyed being there. And they even had a car that I, you know, unfortunately the Metra was on loan to some other museum, so I couldn't see that. But they had a Lancia Delta, which was used in WRC. It was in black color, and that was very, very nice. And they had a Simca also, and the amphibious car, whoever, some Germany company made that, that car was there also. So it was, and the weather was pretty good too. So I had a very good time in Music City. Okay, so now we come to IMSA at Road America. Felipe Nasser was the winner in his caddy with his Brazilian compadre, Pipo Derani. And then, sir, this is now happening on a regular basis. We are up there in age, so it's... should not be a surprise, but still very sad. There was a gentleman by the name of Graham McRae. He was from New Zealand, and I remember him from my early days of interest in motor racing when I had access to very few magazines. So if I got a magazine, I would read the ads 50 times and the articles 200 times, all in a matter of a week or two. So all these names, you know, there were names like Sid Taylor, Fred Oper, and all these names. There was an Australian, young Australian by the name of, I think it was Bruce Ellison. He was very talented, but, you know, when he was doing very well in junior category, he packed up and went back home. And around that time, you know, people like Mike Thackwell came. So anyway, Graham McRae was from New Zealand, and he passed away recently. He was Rookie of the Year in the 1973, I believe he was Rookie of the Year, but I do know he raced in the 1973 Indy 500, and which was a very sad race. There were a couple of fatalities during the weekend, and he also took part on the opening lap of the British Grand Prix same year. And I say opening lap before, as soon as the lap was coming to an end, Mr. Jody Scheckter, who was a real serious whippersnapper, I think it was only his first or second race, he wiped out nearly half the field. And so the other gentleman who passed away is Bob Jenkins. Once upon a time in America, we had a great racing program called Speed Week on ESPN. He was the host with Larry Neuber. He was voice of Indy for decades on radio and ABC's TV coverage, and which, as you mentioned, they would show Sandy Andretti on the pit wall with Ming Court and other kind of stuff. He was battling cancer and passed away at the age of 73. He said of his broadcast achievements, and I quote, "I was just a race fan who got lucky," end of quote. And I remember having a brief chat with him many, many years ago at Laguna Seca. So our condolences to the families of Graham McRae and Bob Jenkins and their fans and friends. Anything else, Mr. Rogers, that you would like to talk about?
Well, really, it's all about NASCAR on road courses. I loved every minute of that race.
The Watkins Glen?
Yes.
You know, I watched that with my friend, and the place is beautiful. And it's good that NASCAR is doing like 6 or 7 road races. So we'll see how it works out. And Kyle Larson won, right? Like you said?
Correct. Number 5. Yeah, they're also going to be back-to-back at Indianapolis with the IndyCar and NASCAR, which is a great thing to do. I think a little piggyback action could get a little more cross-traffic between fan bases.
Yeah, no, that's very good, and it's a sign of the times, you know, these racing tracks. You know, it's like in California where you have 2 great tracks, Sears Point and Laguna Seca. They should, you know, promote events at each other track. So it's good for the sport. Like, you know, they used to say what's good for GM is good for the country. I don't know if it's still true. Yeah, I think this cross-pollination is very good. Bring in more fans, remember how big IndyCar racing used to be? I remember in the mid-80s, early 90s, IMSA GTP racing had much more coverage than NASCAR. And not that I have anything against NASCAR, but we need this, you know, all these racing series, including NASCAR, to be, get back to where they were some years ago, which will be good for the whole sport, I think.
And DTM has been very, very exciting. They've had, I think, 5 different winners in 6 races, and it's good to see Albon and Ferrari in there. I like what DTM looks like right now. It looks pretty exciting.
Yeah, they have very good looking cars because they have gone to the, because, you know, Audi pulled out and Mercedes pulled out, so they had to do something, and Gerhard Berger is the boss of that series, so he's done a very good job. They've gone to GT3 specification, and they have also aligned their rules with the Japanese Super GT, which is a very popular series in Japan, with, you know, both Honda, Toyota, and I think Nissan having serious factory involvement. So this is all very good, and there will be motorsports in our lifetime, you know, as we are heading towards the final laps. I miss the sound, but, you know, I guess you get used to it.
And just to remind everybody, Laguna Seca is this weekend, the Monterey Historics. If you don't live in California, it's worth flying out. I don't care if you have to sleep in your car. This is a great event, and there'll be all the auction houses, Russo and Steele, Mecum, Gooding and Company. There's some that I don't even know, Bonhams. And then you got the Quail. You got Pebble Beach. You've got Jay Leno hanging around feeling good. I'm telling you, this is a great place to go. Monterey weekend is this weekend, Nas, so I'm getting ready. I'm taking a lot of vitamins. Because you know how important that is for the body.
Well, let me tell you how important this event is, sir. It was at this track that I experienced the greatest moment of my life when I walked up to an old gentleman sitting, got his autograph, shook his hands, and that was Hermann Long, who won the Tripoli Grand Prix in the 1930s. And I just could not, I still cannot believe that I would live to not only see, but have a meeting of the flesh with Hermann Long, you know, somebody from that era. Same track, same event. I saw Juan Manuel Fangio drive a Silver Arrow. Oh my God, I mean, talk about race fan being lucky. And then, of course, this is where we interviewed Mika Hakkinen, Emerson Fittipaldi, Mario Andretti, R. Nige, Bobby Unser, which was one of my best experiences in talking to a racing driver. So this has been a great track, a great event, and of course, I would say in the very best part of this whole world, California.
Down in Monterey. So that's what we should do. Listen to Monterey Pop, go to Monterey, have a good time, have some clams. Nasser, I want you to have a nice evening. I want to thank everybody who listens to the program. I'll see you at Laguna Seca.
I thought you were going to say at the calamari stand.
Nope.
Thank you, Mr. Rogers.
Yeah.